It's July 18th, 2023, 1903 hours, 1903 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here with you. Carl Jung said, "Woe to those who live by examples. There is no life in them. If you live by example, you live the life of that example. But who will live your life but yourself? So live your own life." And Confucius, the Chinese philosopher, said, "People in ancient times did not like to talk much. They considered it a shame for themselves not to keep up with their own words." Mark Twain said, "Good breeding consists in concealing how much we think of ourselves and how little we think of the other person." And our song for today is from Peter Cetera, was a number one charting single on four charts in 1986 and 87, including Canada, let me look at the others here, Sweden, and two in the U.S., right, and also number two in Norway. But really, of course, by the time 1997 came along, when Celine Dion had her massive hit with the Titanic movie theme song, there were more charts in 1997 than there were in 1986 and 87, as there were vastly more also in 87 than there were in the earlier years too. Perhaps not as vast of a difference, though, compared to the growth of the popularity of the charts for music around the world. Peter Cetera, this is from 1986, Glory of Love.
Here, there's so many things I want to
so many songs have been heard over the airwaves, the radio, over the years, and it's sad to say that I know they're there, but I've forgotten most of them, and just to find them again is so, you know, affirming and so renewing and reinvigorating. It's just so powerful. Some of these songs are so powerful in their statement, "We'll live forever," and the power of love and things that matter, things that are mattering, things that are important in life, things that really matter. So that was Peter Cetera from 1986 and 87 with a big hit. So in our Born and Raised article, chapter 2, paragraph 5, this is important, talking about the time when Paul went to Jerusalem the second time, because Paul's second visit is also alluded to at Acts 11, 28 to 30. I'm going to ask that you look these up for yourselves, because we don't really have much time here. And if simple logic keeps us here, it can only add complexity to this situation. First, let us search the book of Acts for Paul's first visit to Jerusalem, whereupon we find that Paul leaves Damascus, quote, a good many days, end quote, after his conversion. Thus, consistent with the 3 years of Galatians chapter 1, verse 18, all of the scriptures I'm going to ask that you look up for yourselves, little ones, and arrives at Jerusalem after escaping Damascus, clearly as reiterated at 2 Corinthians 11, 32 and 33, referring to also Acts 9, 22 to 26. Paul arrives on his first visit to Jerusalem, as stated at Acts 9 and 26, thus, and his second visit is clearly as seen at Acts 11, 28 to 30, and Acts 12, 1 to 25, where a rather miraculous coincidence with the civic record occurs in Scripture, relating to the timing of his second visit. Here, between that time when Paul and Barnabas were sent to Jerusalem, Acts 11 and 30, on a relief ministry and their later departure, Acts 12, 25, we read, as given by Luke, that King Herod Agrippa the First dies, Acts 12, verses 1 to 23. This is not the same King Herod who died shortly after the birth of Jesus, but a later King Herod, whose date of death is documented from civic history as in 44 of the Common Era. Furthermore, there is a famine reported by Josephus as coming during the procuratorships of Cuspius Fadus and Tiberius Julius Alexander, quote unquote, probably, quote unquote, probably 44 to 48 CE, and we'll see by whom this is quoted in a moment. And this includes 44 CE, those years 44 through 48 includes 44, when Paul visited Jerusalem. A sound historical basis for the dates seems possible. One approximate chronological indication for apostolic history, according to scholar Mr. F.F. Bruce, 1962. And it's Mr. Bruce who's saying probably, I believe. Let's look at 4 through 6 in the references. Bulletin, that's F.F. Bruce, reference 4. Reference 5 is from Josephus. Josephus is not a person who would use the word probably. But Mr. F.F. Bruce is a person who would use the word probably. Now, also reference 6 is from Josephus as well. Antiquities is a book that Josephus wrote called Antiquities of the Jews. But we have all the references here. We have some fascinating references in this paragraph as well. But let's move on. This is an important chapter. But so just before we move on, let's just note that the evidence here points to this time of 44 CE for the famine. And that is the famine that was the reason why Paul and Barnabas went to Jerusalem, was to bring a relief ministration to the brothers in Jerusalem who were subject to this famine. So it's very logical that this would be the right time. But we also know that King Herod died at the same time when Paul and Barnabas were in Jerusalem, from the book of Acts in chapter 12. You can read chapter 12 and you see that it very strongly indicates that King Herod Agrippa died when Paul and Barnabas were in Jerusalem, right in that chapter. And so, since we also believe from civic history that King Herod Agrippa died in 44 CE, there's strong evidence here that 44 is the time when Paul made his second visit to Jerusalem, that time with Barnabas. And that's the strong case we have there. Now, our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs 28:5, which says, "Men given to badness cannot understand judgment, but those who are seeking Jehovah can understand everything." So for those who've never heard of Jehovah, that might encourage them to find out more about Jehovah, because it tells us right there that those who are seeking Jehovah can understand everything. So if we'd like to understand everything, then that would be a good idea, to seek Jehovah. Numbers 18, "And Jehovah proceeded to say to Aaron, 'You and your sons and the house of your father with you will answer for error against the sanctuary. And you and your sons with you will answer for error against your priesthood. And bring near also your brothers of the tribe of Levi, the clan of your father, with you, that they may be joined to you and may minister to you, to both you and your sons with you before the tent of the testimony. And they must keep their obligation to you and their obligation to the entire tent. Only to the utensils of the holy place and to the altar they must not come near, that they may not die. Neither they nor you men. And they must be joined to you and must keep their obligation to the tent of meeting as respects all the service of the tent. And no stranger may come near to you men. And you must keep your obligation to the holy place and your obligation to the altar, that no further indignation may occur against the sons of Israel. And I, look, I have taken your brothers the Levites from among the sons of Israel as a gift for you, as those given to Jehovah to carry on the service of the tent of meeting. And you and your sons with you should safeguard your priesthood as regards every concern of the altar and as regards what is inside the curtain. And you men must render service. As a service of gift, I shall give your priesthood, and the stranger drawing near should be put to death.' And Jehovah spoke further to Aaron, 'As for me, look, I have given you the custody of the contributions made to me.'" So everybody is a different person. For example, we don't, just because God speaks to somebody doesn't mean he means for everybody to do the same thing. Or just because any human might speak to another human doesn't mean that everybody should listen to what, or hear the gossip about what that person said to that other person and then try to do the same thing. That's not the correct approach. Each person should listen individually to what is told to them by each other person. Shouldn't be gossip, used as, at least the gossip should not be used as any basis for believing anything or for taking any advice. "Of all the holy things of the sons of Israel, I have given them to you and to your sons as a portion, as an allowance to time indefinite. This should become yours out of the most holy things, out of the offering made by fire, every offering of theirs, together with every grain offering of theirs, and every sin offering of theirs, and every guilt offering of theirs, which they will return to me. It is something most holy for you and for your sons. In a most holy place you should eat it. Every male should eat it. It should become something holy to you. And this belongs to you. The contribution of their gift, together with all the wave offerings of the sons of Israel, I have given them to you and your sons and your daughters with you as an allowance to time indefinite. Everyone clean in your house may eat it. All the best of the oil and all the best of the new wine and the grain, their first fruits, which they will give to Jehovah, I have given them to you. The first ripe fruits of all that is on their land, which they will bring to Jehovah, yours it should become. Everyone clean in your house may eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel should become yours. Everything opening the womb of every sort of flesh, which they will present to Jehovah among man and among beasts, should become yours. However, you should without fail redeem the firstborn of mankind and the firstborn of the unclean beast. You should redeem. And with a redemption price for it, from a month old onward, you should redeem it by the estimated value, 5 silver shekels by the shekel of the holy place. It is 20 gerahs. Only the firstborn bull or firstborn male lamb or firstborn goat you should not redeem. They are something holy. Their blood you should sprinkle upon the altar, and their fat you should make smoke as an offering made by fire for a restful odor to Jehovah. And their flesh should become yours. Like the breast of the wave offering, and like the right leg, it should become yours. All the holy contributions which the sons of Israel will contribute to Jehovah, I have given to you and your sons and your daughters with you as an allowance to time indefinite. It is a covenant of salt to time indefinite before Jehovah for you and your offspring with you. And Jehovah went on to say to Aaron, in their land you will not have an inheritance, and no share will become yours in their midst. I am your share and your inheritance in the midst of the sons of Israel. And to the sons of Levi, look, I have given every tenth part in Israel as an inheritance in return for their service, that they are carrying on the service of the tent of meeting. And the sons of Israel should no more come near to the tent of meeting to incur sin so as to die. And the Levites themselves must carry on the service of the tent of meeting, and they are the ones who should answer for their error. It is a statute to time indefinite during your generations that in the midst of the sons of Israel they should not get possession of an inheritance. For the tenth part of the sons of Israel, which they will contribute to Jehovah as a contribution, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. That is why I have said to them, in the midst of the sons of Israel they should not get possession of an inheritance. Then Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, and you should speak to the Levites, and you must say to them, you will receive from the sons of Israel the tenth part that I have given to you from them for your inheritance, and you must contribute from it as a contribution to Jehovah a tenth part of the tenth part, and it must be reckoned to you as your contribution, like the grain of the thrashing floor and like the full produce of the wine or oil press. In this way you yourselves also will contribute a contribution to Jehovah from all your tenth parts that you will receive from the sons of Israel, and from them you must give the contribution to Jehovah, to Aaron the priest. Well, from all the gifts to you, you will contribute every sort of contribution to Jehovah of the very best of it, as something holy from them. And you must say to them, when you contribute the best of them, then it will certainly be reckoned to the Levites as the produce of the thrashing floor and as the produce of the wine or oil press. And you must eat it in every place, you and your household, because it is your wages in return for your service in the tent of meeting, and you must not incur sin for it when you contribute the best from them. And you must not profane the holy things of the sons of Israel, that you may not die. Now we know the Levites didn't serve in the tent of meeting, except for the sons of Aaron, but they served around the tent of meeting in various ways, as we've seen, and transporting the tent of meeting, things like that. And now, since that's the end of Numbers chapter 18, we might look at Acts number 27, chapter 27. Now, Paul had just been listened to by Agrippa II, Herod Agrippa II, and by Porcius Festus, and they were learning that Paul was not guilty of anything, but Paul had appealed to Caesar, so now, as it was decided for us to sail away to Italy, Luke is writing this, they proceeded to hand both Paul and certain other prisoners over to an army officer named Julius of the band of Augustus. Is Luke going with him? It sounds like it. Going aboard a boat from Adramyttium that was about to sail to places along the coast of the district of Asia, we set sail, there being with us Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. And the next day we landed at Sidon, which is a place on the east coast of the Mediterranean. And Julius treated Paul with human kindness and permitted him to go to his friends and enjoy their care. So they had sailed north to get to Sidon. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And we navigated through the open sea along Cilicia and Pamphylia. These are places in Asia. What do we call that? Asia Minor, right? That's right. And put into port at Myra in Lycia. But there, the army officer found a boat from Alexandria that was sailing for Italy, and he made us board it. Then, after sailing on slowly quite a number of days and coming to Cnidus with difficulty, because the wind did not let us get on, we sailed under the shelter of Crete at Salmone. And coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, near which was the city Lycia. As considerable time had passed, and by now it was hazardous to navigate, because even the fast of Atonement Day had already passed by, Paul made a recommendation, saying to them, "Men, I perceive that navigation is going to be with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and the boat, but also of our souls." However, the army officer went heeding the pilot and the ship owner rather than the things said by Paul. Now, as the harbor was inconvenient for wintering, the majority advised setting sail from there to see if they could somehow make it to Phoenix to winter, a harbor of Crete that opens toward the northeast and toward the southeast. Moreover, when the south wind blew softly, they thought they had as good as realized their purpose. And they lifted anchor and began coasting inshore along Crete. After no great while, however, a tempestuous wind called Euroachilo rushed down upon it. As the boat was violently seized and was not able to keep its head against the wind, we gave way and were borne along. Now we ran under the shelter of a certain small island called Cauda, and yet we were hardly able to get possession of the skiff at the stern. But after hoisting it aboard, they began using helps to undergird the boat, and being in fear of running aground on the Syrtis, they lowered the gear. The Syrtis is two large shallow gulfs full of shifting sandbanks on the coast of Libya, North Africa. They lowered the gear and thus were driven along. Yet, because we were being violently tossed with the tempest, the following day they began to lighten the ship. And the third day, with their own hands, they threw away the tackling of the boat. All the ropes, all the sails. That doesn't sound like a good thing, if that's what they mean by the tackling. When now neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no little tempest was lying upon us, all hope of our being saved finally began to be cut off. And when there had been a long abstinence from food, then Paul stood up in the midst of them and said, "Men, you certainly ought to have taken my advice and not have put out to sea from Crete and have sustained this damage and loss. Still, now I recommend to you to be of good cheer, for not a soul of you will be lost, only the boat will. For this night there stood near me an angel of the God to whom I belong and to whom I render sacred service, saying, Have no fear, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And look, God has freely given you all those sailing with you. Therefore, be of good cheer, men, for I believe God that it will be exactly as it has been told me. However, we must be cast ashore on a certain island. Now, as the 14th night fell, and we were being tossed to and fro on the Sea of Adria, at midnight the sailors began to suspect they were drawing near to some land. And they sounded the depth and found it 20 fathoms. So they proceeded a short distance and again made a sounding and found it 15 fathoms. And because of fearing we might be cast somewhere upon the rocks, they cast out 4 anchors from the stern and began wishing for it to become day. But when the sailors began seeking to escape from the boat and lowered the skiff into the sea under the pretense of intending to let down anchors from the prow, Paul said to the army officer and the soldiers, "Unless these men remain in the boat, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. Now, close to the approach of day, Paul began to encourage one and all to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day you have been on the watch, and you are continuing without food, having taken nothing for yourselves. Therefore, I encourage you to take some food, for this is in the interest of your safety. For not a hair of the head of one of you will perish." After he said this, he also took a loaf, gave thanks to God before them all, and broke it and started eating. So they all became cheerful, and themselves began taking some food. Now altogether, we souls in the boat were 276. That's a fairly sizable boat, it sounds like. When they had been satisfied with food, they proceeded to lighten the boat by throwing the wheat overboard into the sea. Finally, when it became day, they could not recognize the land, but they were observing a certain bay with a beach, and on this they were determined if they could to beach the boat. So cutting away the anchors, they let them fall into the sea, at the same time loosing the lashings of the rudder oars, and, after hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. When they lighted upon a shoal washed on each side by the sea, they ran the ship aground, and the prow got stuck and stayed immovable. But the stern began to be violently broken to pieces. At this it became the determination of the soldiers to kill the prisoners, that no one might swim away and escape. But the army officer desired to bring Paul safely through and restrain them from their purpose, and he commanded those able to swim to cast themselves into the sea and make it to land first, and the rest to do so, some upon planks, and some upon certain things from the boat. And thus it came about that all were brought safely to land. And that's the end of Acts chapter 27, little children. So we see how the fact that Paul was on the boat saved the lives of the other prisoners. Because the man in charge of bringing Paul safely through prevented the slaughtering of the prisoners. So Paul is on his way to Italy, right? He appealed to Caesar. He's going to Rome, apparently. That's why they were sailing off to Italy from Caesarea, where they were initially at having the trial. So, of course, they started initially in Jerusalem as well. Then they went to Caesarea. Now they went up the coast to Sidon, and then they went to the southern ports of Asia Minor. But they sailed under the shelter of Cyprus right before arriving to the open sea along Cilicia and Pamphylia. But they landed in Lycia and so on. And then they kept moving west through the Mediterranean, sailing under the shelter of Crete at Salmone, right? And so on. So they're heading toward Italy to the west from the eastern coast of the Mediterranean. That's the story. We're at we've got a couple of minutes, and that's about all we have right now. But that was fairly good. But I mean, of course, it's always good to read God's word. We always learn more every time, it seems to me. And you can decide what you learn or don't learn, I suppose, but you need to learn or not learn, or listen or not listen, or study or not study, as you determine for yourself. That I can't determine for you. So this fascinating chronology here of Paul going to Jerusalem, that this was prior in our article today. That was prior to this. This is at the very end of Paul's life almost. This is very much later, more like 60 and later of the Common Era, 20 years after the events of Paul's second visit to Jerusalem, that these things are happening. So I love you very much. I wish you a wonderful, splendid, enjoyable day. I've got some news about my tooth. I'm going to be seeing or contacting my endodontist on the advice of my dentist to go and see about this tooth, to see whether I need a root canal, and we'll be doing that soon, I think. In the meantime, since we're nearly at a conclusion here, and we are running out of time very rapidly, in my behalf, as it is also July 18th, 2023, 1936 hours, I'm Ward Green, and on my behalf, this is Cammy, and this is Sissy. Get a better view of Sissy. There we go. And they are saying bye for now.